This meeting is now being recorded.
Are we on? All right. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our meeting of the Judicial Branch Budget Committee. I wanted to welcome everybody. This is as you know, we spent the last 4 or so months working on the innovation grants. We're going to be reporting out the innovations grant. The council meeting was Friday. And at this point in our schedule for the year, we're switching gears and moving on to talking about the budget change proposals. As we all know, and for anybody listening, budget change proposals are a method by which any budgeting entity in the state, in our case, the judicial branch, appeals to the Department of Finance, the governor, for increase in a budgetary appropriation for any variety of reasons, including just general operations. So that's why we are here today. I want to welcome everybody both in the room and on the phone. This is an open meeting. So before we start, though, I'm going to ask Watko to take the floor.
Thank you, Judge Rubin, definitely. So, Judge Rubin?
Here.
Justice Humes?
Here.
Judge Anderson?
Here.
Judge Martin?
Here.
Judge Brody?
Here.
Judge Nadler? I understand he might be joining us later. Judge Stout?
Here.
Ms. Flenner?
Here.
Hi, Barbara.
Here.
Right.
Pretty good. And then when Judge Nadler joins, we can wait to have until the football. So this meeting is an open public meeting. This meeting is being recorded. What that means is members of the public can join us and can listen to the call via a listen-only code that they've been provided. They can join and leave the meeting at any time without interruption. Who just joined the meeting? Oh. Apparently there is some interruption. It's not as seamless as we had hoped. So we will ignore all the chiming when it happens.
It could be staff who are prepared to respond to questions.
Great. If staff rings in, if they can let us know they're here so we know who's there. Apparently not. All right. For those of you who are on the phone, staff or otherwise, we ask that you please put your phones on mute while not speaking to us to avoid any background noise. Don't place us on hold at any time. Because we will then hear the on-hold music, which would require us to disconnect the entire meeting and reconnect, which is difficult on the public listeners. And before you speak, if you're on the phone, please identify yourself so we all know who's speaking, what's going on, and what subject about which you are talking. Is that a staff member who just joined us? So I guess the public, when they join us, is just going to chime after all. So
I'll ask staff that they can.
So I would like to start by inviting a motion to approve our minutes from October 26, 2016.
So moved.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh.
It's moved by Ibarra, seconded by Brody. Right. Is there any discussion? If I see none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? All right. Motion passed. All right. Is there
we're working on it.
Any written comments? Well, Mr. Pedrovic, did you receive any?
No, there's no request in person or any written comments.
All right. Thank you. That does conclude the public comment portion of our meeting. All right, so the main topic of today's meeting is going to be, let me just describe a little bit about process so anybody listening on the phone from the public can kind of keep up with the conversation. Under a process adopted by the council back in the fall, in an effort to streamline and make more uniform how the budget change proposals are developed in the branch, we could also refine and of our advocacy efforts, we start the budget change proposal process by seeking from anyone in the branch, really, any entity in the branch, what we call an IFR, or an initial funding request. The initial funding requests come in, they kind of describe for us in broad strokes what it is they're seeking, roughly the amount of money that they are seeking, and why this is a good idea. What our proposal, what we're going to do then is we're going to sort through the IFRs, depending on how many there are, and then the IFRs that survive today's meeting will go on and be developed into the actual budget change proposals. When those come back at a later meeting, we'll go ahead and prioritize those, and then I'll present those to, or the committee will present those to the council for their approval. That's the process. So we're kind of in phase one, if you will, just looking at the IFRs themselves. Let me make a proposal to the committee. There are actually 23 of them. Let me start with a question to Mr. Theodorovic. In terms of the actual number that we have before us today, which the ones we've posted online as well, where are we in terms of previous years?
They're in the same ballpark, and in fact, given that many of them are carryovers of prior issues, work by staff to need to improve and better the prior products. We only have a handful of matches that are new that we have to change proposals.
All right, so we're kind of in the ballpark of where we've been in the past. In terms of, when I say that, what you're saying is staff has worked up 23 in the past year.
Yes, in fact,
to completion.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
As I look at them, I think I see we have, of the 23, 16 are from prior years, 7 are wholly new. And what I'm hearing you saying is, at least on the prior ones, the amount of staff time it takes to actually get them updated and refined is less than the ones that are brand new.
Yes, correct.
All right, let me make a proposal about how to handle this, because there's 23 of them. And the public can look at them online on our webpage. And what about this? And this is not a declarative statement. It's more of an interrogative statement, but it will sound like a declarative statement. What about this? Why don't I just, since we can all see them, maybe ask for discussion on those we think should not go forward. Kind of restrict our conversation to that, just because otherwise there's 23 of them. Have a conversation around that, and then following, once we kind of get through that, look at, kind of double-check the committees that are supposed to touch them, their consult on them, and make that the approach. I think that would be probably most efficient, but again, it's just a thought. Let's go around the room. Anybody have a different thought or a better idea? I'm looking at a lot. Very hello. I think that's a good way to proceed. Thank you very much.
Thumbs up.
All right, let's go around then. So does anybody, looking at the 23, feel like there's one or more that you don't believe ought to go forward from here? Justice Hughes, go ahead.
Well, I have a question first, and that is probably, and that's for Zlatko. I see there are a number of these proposals that are noted in are noted that they've already gone forward last year and they were denied, or they've gone forward for a number of years and been denied. I guess I'm asking you, is there a point to continuing to submit BCPs that continue to get denied? I mean, do we have new evidence? Do we have new data? Do we have new supporting information to pursue some of these things, or are we just wasting our time?
I think at this point in the process, this would give us an opportunity to explore those points that you just made
right.
In an effort to strengthen our position.
Right.
Given that there are many more steps left before final submission, of which that would be a part of the consideration, is have we found ways to improve these products to the Department of Finance. So I would say at this juncture, I wouldn't want to take that off the table. Something I think you appropriately bringing up is, final analysis, what should go to the Department of Finance would be the most compelling case for funding.
So it may be that there are many proposals here that if we can't come up with additional information to support the proposal, or we can't come up with a better reason why we need it, we may decide later on not to pursue it, but we don't need to decide that now.
Example, there have been some facility funding requests that have been denied over the last few years. But what is changing is, due to the lack of those funds, state of our facilities has actually gotten worse,
unfortunately.
And therefore, I think, unfortunately, more examples of the detrimental impact of that lack of funding as an effort to compel the budget writers to include that kind of funding in the budget. There's always an opportunity to revisit and improve. In some cases, unmet needs, the need may have gotten worse.
Okay. Okay. All right, any other questions?
This is Madeline McLean. I'm sorry, it has actually nothing to do with what you're talking about right at this second. For the staff on the phone that are subject matter experts that are going to be potentially talking about some of the issues, I'm sending you a passcode that you can actually speak with. So I apologize, Judge Rubin, but we will have a flurry of beeps and repeats.
Well, it turns out when the public is dialing in, we're also getting beeps and repeats, so I don't think that marginal extra number will be problematic. All right, so I see Justice Hume has a pen in the air, so I guess he wants to pull off.
I mean, there's one that I don't understand enough to feel comfortable pursuing, and that is number 15, or I guess IFR-18-27.
Okay, so 15, let's do one at a time.
Okay, well, it's the same one.
15, I see it. Oh, I see.
Yeah, okay, so this is... this identity management solution for the branch?
Page 7 of the materials.
Right. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure.
I mean, maybe somebody can...
is the tech person on the phone?
So I believe that IT staff calling in will be uncalling in and recalling in related to this. So give them just a second.
Sure.
All right, while we're waiting for tech to call in, is there any others?
I guess I have a question on the funding for the CASA program, which is, where is that? Number 7. On page 6 of the materials, item 7.
Right.
And I know courts in the past did that individually. Has the branch ever done that in the past? And are there any other third-party entities like this that are charitable-type organizations that the branch funds?
We have staff from CFCC calling in for that. We have Don Will present and respond.
Done it in the past. We've been funding it in the past.
For about 20 years.
Okay.
That's pursuant to that statute.
Yeah.
I'll see you in a minute.
All right. Is there someone from tech on the phone?
We have Kathy Fink or David Kuhn on the line.
Hi. Good afternoon. This is Virginia Sanders Hines. I'm here with Kathy Sink and also with David Kuhn. We just joined, we changed the line.
All right. We have a question on item number 15, which is IFR regarding employee identity management solutions. Justice Hughes, why don't you go ahead and ask your question?
I guess, to me, this is not something that, of course, there's an apparent need, but I don't know that much about IT, so I guess I just wanted to explain to me why we need to go forward and do this.
The identity management solution is part of the overall solution for statewide e-filing. It's part of that. And it's something that has been put forward for quite some time in terms of trying to bring that to fruition. And so this is our opportunity to deploy this as a statewide solution as opposed to looking at this for an individual court, quite frankly. And given that we're looking at e-filing as a statewide initiative, this would be essentially part of that solution to support that.
Can you flesh that out a little bit more? Like, tell us how it all works together.
That's where I am going to be a bit challenged, because I don't have the folks online that develop the IFR. But essentially, what we're looking at is a way of, as opposed to having individual means of identifying individuals who are logging into the system, we're looking at a statewide, a single way to log into our systems. Right now, for example, if you have to log in to be it Phoenix or to one of the case management systems or to some of your, even some of your desktop, you have to use a variety of means of accessing those systems. And so what we're looking at is a way to simplify that process through an identity management solution. Okay, and also Kathy can update you too with respect to e-filing to help basically further elaborate on what we're trying to do.
I mean, this came up during the e-filing work stream when they were working on an RFP for e-filing, which I think was just published. And they realized that a person who was interacting with the court, especially when you're looking at e-filing, it would add more places that one, a court user or client would need to access in order to handle their files. So if they're filing electronically, they have to be able to log into an EFSP, an e-filing service provider, in order to file their case. And so then they also need to, once the case is filed, log into the court records so that they see information with their records on the courts. And I'm trying to think of some of the other, I know in e-filing there were a few other areas that a court user would need to access in order to take care of their cases. And I think added to that is, and again, as Virginia mentioned, this is statewide. And so somebody who's filing in multiple courts would be able to log in with a single login to access any of their files, even across courts. So that's a little bit of context from the e-filing perspective.
All right. Judge Barton, Judge Anderson, and then Ms. Ibarra.
It sounds like from your last comment that this is designed to work with all three of the case management providers that were the winners, so to speak, in the e-filing work stream. Is that correct?
That's correct. And in addition, one other major case management system that is also in heavy use in California, eCourts from Journal Technologies. So at least four of the major case management system vendors.
All right, Judge Marshall, Anderson.
And then would you say that this RFR is more geared towards streamlining and ease of use rather than security?
I would say yes. It absolutely is geared towards streamlining and ease of use. I think where it hits security is, again, people are all aware of the dangers of having to write down all your passwords because you can't remember all of your IDs and passwords. So having a single user ID and password, you know, would allow people not to have to do that. So I think that's at least one place where it hits security.
So maybe if it's okay, if I could jump in and talk a little bit about identity management. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm Robert O. Young. I'm the CIO for Judicial Council. I've been on the job now for 4 months, but previously I think I've met many of you in my role as CIO for Santa Clara. So I understand that you're talking about identity management.
Right, so we're taking questions on it, and what the last question was, is this particular IFR aimed at ease of use or security or both?
So it's actually pretty substantial because we see that identity management actually is fundamental to all our future IT services. And so the idea behind identity management is that basically you would have a single sign-on for all court services. And this would be internal and external to the branch so that you could have members of the public, you could have attorneys, you could have justice partners, as well as judicial officers and court staff. And they basically would have a unique login. So, for example, they may have like a My Cal Court ID login.
And so they have this unique identifier and password that they would log into all of our systems to be able to obtain various services. And so the problem that we have now, for example, as you are, for example, paying a traffic ticket, if you get a traffic ticket in Los Angeles County, if you get a traffic ticket in Shasta, you have to log into different systems in order to go and pay your ticket. So we want to create a user experience very similar to what you get at the DMV, where you don't go to an individual county DMV website. You go to the dmv.ca.gov website. You log in once, and then you're recognized, and then you basically can transact whatever you need to do. So the idea is that once we have a identity management system, we can uniquely identify every person who enters the court system and provide them with services that they need. So if I need to pay my traffic ticket, I can log in with my CalCourt ID. I can get onto a portal, and it will say, you have traffic tickets outstanding in Santa Clara and in Alpine. Would you like to pay for those? Oh, and by the way, you have a upcoming hearing in Santa Barbara, and you've been called for jury duty in San Diego. So by having an identity management system, that basically provides the glue for uniformly connecting all of our systems to be able to identify a particular person. So even I know when I was in Santa Clara Court, we had the issue of people coming in with court cases, and sometimes they would be Jose Sanchez, Jose J. Sanchez, John A. Sanchez, and they would be the same, but from a from the court papers, it would look like they're different people. And so the idea would be that once we have this identity management system, people could come in, you associate a case with that person, and you could see all the cases associated with that person. They could then log in with their unique identifier as well, and then pull up all the case information related to themselves. Similarly, an attorney who has cases could log in with their unique ID, and then based on that unique ID, we could link them to various court cases throughout California to say, here's the things that you have access to. Also, if you look at something like a justice partner, with a justice partner who needs to interact with the courts, they could, again, log into one of our systems, and based on their unique ID, because we could give them heightened access to our information based on their privileges, without that unique identifier, it would be very, very difficult to do that. So the idea of identity management actually is very fundamental to all future IT services, because it's the way that we can uniquely identify people who are coming into our systems and then being able to provide them with services.
So I have two questions. I think this is a good idea, and obviously it would be ideal to do this, but like in terms of prioritizing for IFRs and BPPs, my two questions are, I think you touched on this at the end, would having the system permit the users to do something they couldn't already do? I mean, I know it's complicated now, but would it?
Absolutely. I think it would absolutely simplify their access to justice and access to their information. So, for example, one of the things that they could do easily would be to subscribe to alerts. So, for example, they could say, here's my two or three cases that I've got open, and because I've got a unique identifier, I can then subscribe to alerts so that if there are additional motions, if there's additional documents that are submitted, if the judicial officer takes some action, I can be alerted based on actions that are taken on, that particular case. The biggest benefit really is being able to tie a individual across multiple courts and multiple systems. So today, if I log into one system, I have to have a different ID in another system, and those two courts won't know that I'm the same person. And so by having this unique identifier, a court would know that Samantha Jones in San Diego is the same Samantha Jones in Santa Clara. And so, again, they could provide much better services to them based on that knowledge.
And thank you. My second question is, Do you get the sense that if we do it now as opposed to wait, I mean, if we wait and, you know, prioritize this lower down, and if we wait, it will be more expensive to change everything over because our online services will be more robust, so there will be more to do? Or, I mean, I'm just talking about, like, in terms of time, not
right.
in terms of interest, but, like, as the services get more complicated online, will this then become a more expensive problem?
Can I just jump in for a second on this one? So, for purposes of open meeting, this isn't my part of conversation, and my only concern is that
people
may not have joined us because the prioritization conversation is for a future meeting, and we probably should stick with the people that the public is expecting to hear today. But it's a great question.
Thank you.
We'll all be asking that in the next meeting. All right. More questions? Oh, I'm sorry. I just wondered.
Sorry. So just for clarification on the login,
yes.
is that going to be maintained by judicial counsel staff, meaning I know for us in our case management system, it's my IS department that is constantly contacted because somebody forgets their password, et cetera.
Right.
Who's
right.
monitoring that?
Right. So more than likely what we would need to do is we would need to figure out a external service, so that would not be an internal service. There's many actual commercial services that provide identity management, and so they are actually in the business of providing identity management for large corporations, large organizations, and so they have the security, the policies in place, and the technologies to be able to manage things like, you know, new user adds, password changes, things like that. And so what happens is sometimes there's a little bit of confusion and concern regarding identity management and access to systems. And so identity management doesn't necessarily mean that you have access to all of the systems. Identity management means that it gives an organization the ability to uniquely identify a person who's using a resource. And so it's only really for identity management. It's not to provide access. So the individual courts would have control over providing access, but now what they would do is they would have a way to uniquely identify everyone who's coming into the system. And then based on who is coming in, they can provide the appropriate access as necessary. So if they have, you know, by default, somebody may have public access, right? So you would not give them sensitive access to sensitive information. They would just have access to any public documents. But once they identify themselves, and if you know that they are an attorney on a particular case, then you can configure your systems to then give them that access. But it's really on the court side in terms of giving that control. All the identity management system does is it uniquely identifies everybody.
So even, but basically a conduit. It's
yeah.
going to be that court. So you use the example of if you have a traffic ticket mm-hmm. here and a traffic ticket, they're logging in, but they're still access in that court system in order to make those payments.
Yes.
The party merge function, which is what you're talking
mm-hmm.
about with Jose Sanchez, Jose B. Sanchez, Jose Baez, that still lies within our individual court
yep.
to identify them and agree and
yep.
make the decision that is
exactly.
the party.
Yes,
okay.
exactly. Right. So there is work on
the
court side to configure that, but without identity management, the task of doing that would be extremely difficult.
Like it's not something that we should ding now. It seems like it's not. We should go forward.
I think I was confused. At least on the criminal side of the house, I guess my thought was the fingerprints.
Oh.
That links everybody. But the problem is there's no way for the system to access those.
Right.
That's those are individuals that have access. That makes more sense. All right. Any other thoughts on ones who don't want to go forward? Well, Blacko, sounds like you're shot to get about 23 feet. So
we're here for.
Good, good. So let's shift our gears a little bit. Let's go through them now, this individually, and make sure we are all comfortable that the correct committees are actually going to be touching. Let me get a motion. Can I get a motion on the 23 then to move them on to BCP development?
So moved.
All right. Ibarra, motion. Stout, second. Great. Okay. Is there discussion on the 23? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? All abstentions? All right. Passing unanimously. All right, now let's go on. And for those of you on the phone following on the online posting, we're looking at the second column from the right, where it says JCC committee at the top. So let's go through each of these, and let's make sure that these are the committees that we believe ought to be touching the proposal as a result of PCP. We can add committees. We can deselect committees. Our discretion. And then for those of you following along who are looking at all these acronyms that are flying like snow flurry, if you go to the last page of the document with the summaries, you'll see the legend in the back that will identify them.
Judge,
all right. Go ahead.
May I ask, I just have a question or really before we do this, and that is one of and I've mentioned this before, one of my goals is to try to reduce the amount of work, both on staff and committees, for the BCPs that we are going to go forward with. And I'm not, now that we've approved all 23 of these for further development, are there going to be other opportunities for us to intervene at some point to reduce the amount of, I don't want, in other words, now that these 23 are going forward, is it a full press effort on the part of the staff and the committees develop these BCPs up fully and completely, or are there going to be other opportunities to kind of say, wait a minute, let's not, we don't need to go for any further? There will be a revisit.
There's only seven new. The other 16 have already been written up before. My impression from the Mr. Theodorovic was saying was that probably the amount of work on some of the older ones.
All right, so staff doesn't think that this is overwhelming. They're fine with this.
And what you're going to get is you're going to get feedback from the committees.
Yeah.
So whether they agree or not.
Okay.
There's cost issues when one committee came up with it and it's another. You get that feedback and have an opportunity as they've been more developed to understand and make progress on further justification.
Okay.
And we have to. I think my thought is, it's more work for our committee, but I think that's why we're here. So if we wind up in a situation where multiple of these are getting significant flack from some of the committees that should touch them, we should reconvene, look at those, and maybe spike them to get them off the staff's desk if that comes to pass. But like I say, 75% of them have already been through. Let's keep going. Maybe we should do this the way we did. As far as the efficient way is, you've seen it. Is there anybody who thinks one of these should have a different, either deselect a committee that's been suggested or add a committee that's not there?
Let me make a comment.
Yeah.
We as staff putting this list together, we're cognizant of the not over referring.
Okay.
But making sure that there is the appropriate. So that was our basis, not to throw everybody in the kitchen sink into a review, but really thinking about the process to ensure that you are getting the proper counsel from all committees. With that, that's sort of a working assumption.
Right, and I think in my kind of ongoing conversations with staff, it's about a multitude of just administrative issues, they are highly sensitive to the fact that the committee's call, not theirs. So take no offense if we make any changes.
Well,
go ahead, Judge Brody.
So for the first funding request, the internal document tracking number IFR 18-14, this is the appellate court judicial workload funding request. The question I have is whether or not the committee that has studied workload allocations at the trial court level, have they had any hand in evaluating appellate court workload?
The Workload Assessment Advisory Committee, the
yes.
WAC? I do not know if they've had a look at the appellate side. We could see if that's their charge. Oh, we have Deborah Collier Tucker on the line, who is in appellate services. She can maybe speak to that in terms of what's going on there.
Hi, this is Deborah. Actually, this methodology that is used for the appellate court justices was established over 20 years ago, and it's the process that's been used, and the legislature has provided justices according to the report. There was a study done and a report issued, and that's how this allocation is pulled together through the workload, the caseload, the fully briefed cases.
So when there's a reference in the summary we have referring to, I think it's called the weighted caseload. I'm not seeing it at the moment, but that's what that means.
Yes. That's the methodology that's used in the report for the weighted caseload for the justices.
Is that methodology, is it well established and sort of, you know, non-controversial, and everyone, I mean, is this pretty much recognized as the way that budget decisions are made?
Yes, it has been. As a matter of fact, it was the methodology that was used to get the last justices approved.
Okay. Right.
Well, I guess.
What we do is we update. We have a formula from the report that we update based on the caseload and the data for the current years to come up with what the ultimate weighted average is.
All right, so I guess I'm making a comment more than a question, and it's just that, and it relates to what Judge Brody just talked about. To me, there seems to – what I'm afraid of is that we refer – that these IFRs go to these committees, and they go to the committees that are most interested in seeing that these things go forward, and so the committees are going to sit around and they're going to be, hell yes, you know, so you get the, you're going to have the appellate court clerk saying, of course we need this money. You're going to get the PJs of the appellate court saying, yes, we need the money. So they're going to say, yeah, we need the money. And so we're going to get the response back according to that position. Maybe that's what's supposed to happen, but and maybe it's up to us then to be the sort of the control. I guess we end up being the gatekeepers, but I'm making the observation that by referring it to the committees that are listed on this list, we're not getting any gatekeeping function at this level on these IFRs. Maybe we are.
My response to that is twofold. The first one is that maybe not on this one, but I think there are a number of them where their technical expertise of these committees will be useful to us, and they'll be able to, especially if they weren't the ones that generated it, and kind of giving us some insight as to maybe different ways to refine it. And the second one is, as I said before, we are the committee of Dr. No. So it is our role to be the gatekeepers. And, you know, because the other side of it is, wait a second, you had a committee that was designed to look at this, and they didn't even.
And so now he's trying to.
So I think that's our job. And we're the ones,
right.
Our branch-wide, we look at all the competing issues and interests, and then we're the ones that decide. All right. Any other questions?
I have another question. This will hit other proposals, so I'll ask it now. There are I didn't do a number on all of them, but many of the proposals also include as a referral the Advisory Committee on Financial Accountability and Efficiency for the Judicial Branch.
I'll go back to that. Thanks.
What is, I guess I direct this question to staff, and I don't know who specifically. What is it envisioned that their role would be in this process?
They do have a role in terms of anything that the Judicial Council staff agency is involved in. Part of their charge is to oversee anything where there might be an expansion of responsibilities staff that support any of these VCPs. So to the extent that there's something.
So what would that be in this case?
Well,
the Judicial Council supports it. No, no, but I mean, if we're, so, I understand the Judicial Council support is, you know, the appellate branch is under the Judicial Council, so, if
I think
they work out, so if we're adding, if two justices get added, then that necessarily increases Judicial Council staff as well, is that?
Sorry, this is Madeline. So in terms of the appellate court VCPs, we've always provided those informational to A&E because of the role that appellate court services staff and budget services staff play in developing and monitoring and doing all of the budget updates for them. It really doesn't truly affect the Judicial Council's life as much as informational thing. But if you look at for example, like IFR number 18-04, which is the Phoenix system required updates, so the funding, page 17, if you look at that IFR, even though the program supports trial courts, the funding and the staff program are at the Judicial Council level, and so the A&E will review any proposals that affect the Judicial Council's budget, whether it be just dollars, new staff, new duties, anything like that. They just review and comment because it affects the Judicial Council's budget. Because we are our own line item within our an item of appropriation, or our own program.
So the creation of A&E was a reaction that this current chief took to ensure that there's Judicial Council oversight over Judicial Council staff operation and its budget, and ensuring that any of its increases are reviewed by
the previous
the body.
Justice George. Is it
was A&E created then?
Okay.
Thank you. But that was the point, was to ensure that there's some oversight over the growth change of the Judicial Council budget.
So they're not going, so for this proposal then, it's not that they would dig particularly deep into this proposal in particular. I mean, this seems to me to be fairly straightforward on the face of it. Does this division of the Court of Appeal have a workload that requires increasing it to, you know, stay consistent with the commission? That's not primarily
right. But we do support the appellate courts and all of their administrative functions.
Okay.
So that's the aspect of it.
Right. Yes, in fact, the Chief Justice was your original chair.
That's my revised recollection.
Yeah, there you go. Refresh your recollection. All right. Any other questions about any additions, deletions, or amendments to the committees that are posted in that column that you would like to see?
The appellate court service folks, would they would also weigh in on this?
No, appellate court services support the appellate court, so they're just similar to the way the city supports them in terms of budget. They wouldn't weigh in to provide assistance to the
reinforces the idea that you are backstop against everything.
Oh. So do people want it in or out?
We're a committee. I mean,
well, I think that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, internally, you're all going to have to. Everything's going to have to come back here. To our committee, right? So, I mean, I would take it out probably because it implies. I mean, we're automatically.
I got one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's out.
All right, it's out. Well, we'll have to have a motion later, but. Any other additions, deletions on this? Judge Anderson, you're looking at me. No?
No, I think it's because it's so daunting to have so many, you know, from that perspective, and then to have a lot of people weigh in. You just stop and think about the awesome work that lies ahead.
Yeah.
But it's necessary because in order for us to really make, you know, very wise decisions and make the tough decisions, you're going to need that information from as many sources as possible. I mean, even just, you know, this afternoon we had a few questions and have to have people scramble and come in and get on the line. So you have to be as broad as possible at the outset in order to get what you need to whittle it and funnel it down, even though it seems daunting.
I agree with you. It does seem daunting. I have to say that my observation is that this, I was CJ president when this chief was sworn in. Or vice president, and then soon after she was, in the fall of that year, I became president, and one of the things I observed was that she has really pushed this branch into a very disciplined use and approach using the committee system so that we have the maximum number of eyes on it, so we get all the different pieces worked out before it gets too far down the road, and I think it's kind of worked pretty well, but you're right, it's daunting. I didn't think about it. A lot to say on that. Any other?
Do the Court of Appeals, regarding the next Court of Appeals, proposal about appellate court security 18-15, I know that the Court of Appeal clerks are listed as one of the people we would consult. I don't know. I guess my sense of it would be that they have kind of different roles, but that feels differently that talking about court of appeal security, we want to include, it's important to get the clerk's input into that discussion.
Correct, yes, because they actually, like the clerk in each court will coordinate with the CP on site for coverage and things like that. So they're directly involved in day to day.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Right, more observations? Why don't we do this as two motions? I could suggest. There's been a suggestion that we delete JBBC from the second column because this all comes back here in any event. So maybe do that as a motion, and then as a second motion to approve as we've all reviewed it, we seem to be in agreement with it, just approve it as a block like we did the IFRs, or you can just do it as one motion with both things. Anybody?
I move in one motion to do both things.
And I'll second that.
All right. So motion by Justice Hughes, second by Brody. Discussion. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? All right. Passed unanimously. All right.
We can guess that some of these committees will be keenly interested in
shaping the outcome a certain way, and that's to be expected. There's nothing simple about that. I'm wondering if we could hear a bit about how, so internally, how this will work in terms of it goes to the committees, it gets out, staff gets back, shapes it into something. I mean, I don't know if that would be helpful to anybody else, but I'm wondering how we sort of chart our course, how the budget committee charts its course going forward from here. But I would defer to the chair.
No, I think maybe if we could have Mr. Theodorovic kind of review with us kind of the workload moves from here. I know we reviewed it back when we had the process passed by the council, but I'll be at probably bears a meeting.
Yes, I mean, definitely now that we have the actions to move forward to the next steps, we would be working with the committees in terms of the referral process so that they get. And I have to ask Ellen, are they going to get the IFRs or are they going to get some more detailed contesting?
Depending on when they meet, but the idea was that they would get the IFRs, have their discussion, and hopefully during the discussion process, that will build the BCP concept so they can incorporate any questions that the committee has, any issues that they raise at that time, and that will help form the final BCP concept that comes to the committee.
Okay. Will we see anything between now and when the BCP proposal is submitted in June?
The BCP concepts will come back to you in June. I don't think we had envisioned providing you anything in between except for the concepts towards the end.
However, we heard the chair.
Yeah.
I'm hearing suggest that to the extent that the feedback is not supportive of the concept, that we could return to you. You can pull it out of the process as an amendment to the steps that we've envisioned.
Can I make a suggestion? I'm hearing now from two members, and I'll bet other members are feeling the same way, not particularly anything like this. This is our maiden voyage, as it were. Let's at least this year, maybe the end of May, up in front of the June, come back together, take a look at this again. Let's see what they look like in formed up. That'll give you not a lot of time, maybe it gives you 8 weeks formed up, and then we can kind of weigh in again and see how much more effort we want to put into them before their June submission. I think we have a June meeting, right?
So you're talking about a status. 6 weeks.
Yeah, a status. I think I'm hearing that from Justice Toons, from Judge Brody. I sort of got me thinking, like, there certainly could be any harm in us checking back in and seeing maybe. And having a process like this again, except with the BCP's form now a little bit more formed up, so we can see if we can get a more informed decision about what goes forward and what doesn't. Justice Humes.
I wholly support this idea because my concern is, and it continues to be, that we are not streamlining the process, that we're making the process even worse than it was in terms of all these layers and layers of process. So I think it's really incumbent on us to monitor ourselves and everyone else while we go forward so we ultimately get to the point where we're making it easier on staff and making more informed and better, more streamlined decisions for the branch.
We'll say, as a staff that's been working on this over the last 5.5 years of doing this, is that the affirmation of the touch points, and that has been important for us to understand, because there were times where as staff trying to shepherd them through this process, we might have missed somebody, and this review by an external body assures that we are getting the right touch points, because what would be difficult is if we would get to an August meeting of the council and then a committee will have said, I didn't get a chance to weigh in. So while you feel like there might be some lack of streamlining, I would say that from a risk, a staff managing the process before, the problem would have been missing somebody and all of a sudden you're taking something to the council that hasn't been vetted.
So you're saying that the process, complicated or not, is helping you
because it assures that we have the broadest and most appropriate input from the committee that exists, so that when it gets to the council and gets to you, that you are comfortable that everybody who should be seeing it has, because that the thing is what I've heard Justice Miller say in the past is sort of disjointed, that we didn't always necessarily get all the touch points, and now we can say that we are.
Okay.
In fairness to some of the newer members of the council, we've had some pretty spectacular good way conversations where a hand goes up and it's like, wait, I'm, you know, court commissioner's committee, whatever it is, no one ever SEAC, no one ever ran this by us. There's no way. And then we're up against statutory deadlines.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear, Zlatko. I just want to not forget that we are also going to try to streamline
to make this better. Yeah. First year out, we'll see how it works. Second year and third year, I think that that's a better process about these things.
Yeah.
In the first year, it makes sense to check in. And then I'm hopeful that we'll have a post-mortem at the end of the year, things that we can do to make things go a little faster, a little easier for everybody.
Yeah.
Judge Anderson.
Yeah, I think we will learn. I think that the challenge for us currently is that when you're developing something that's going to impact 58 trial courts, 7 courts of review, and other bodies that is funded by the judicial branch, you don't want to have the perception that it was summarily done and that folks just decided to pick what was expedient or easy in order to present that as part of the budget change proposal. So, again, when you look at our state, that's what, almost the fifth largest economy in the world, it is a daunting task to take a look at something globally to say in order to put together proposals and be as thorough as we can but as efficient as we can. I think our first time out will be a little bit clumsy and probably overdue, and we'll learn, and the next time around we'll probably figure out how to better streamline.
And this is John Wardle here at the meeting. I just acknowledge that there will be then a strategy
about
that. I think that we don't want to lose sight of it. From a technical standpoint, we have a list. But there has to eventually develop a strategy of budget advocacy that starts with the governor's budget. You know, the challenges of trying to get things in the legislative budget is more difficult. So that's still work to be done, notwithstanding these individual issues. The global view of how we proceed is very important. Because it might be that, you know what, there's very worthy items, but in the strategy of what's our focus in year one, they may be, you know what, we are going to hold these for year two as a focus on a different approach. So I just want that to be in the back of your mind, I think, is important, is focus on budget strategy and advocacy with the administration and how these all, because they may come back from a committee's perspective, cities are all worthy, but I think it lies upon the leadership here and Chief Martin to look at, an executive office, look at all of these and think about what's the best package that can go forward, whether it be 17, 23, or 7.
I think also, though, embedded in Justice's observation is something I think we, as a budget committee, could probably be. You start, I think, helping the branch be mindful of, which is all of these assignments, staff will always say yes. They're very hardworking. They're very enthusiastic. They will always say yes to us. But every time they say yes to an activity, it's costly. It's resources that are not being used on other things that we also want to do, like support other advisory committees and what have you. And so I think we do need to be mindful of how we use staff resources because they are fairly limited. At the same time, I'm going to indulge this committee because it's our first year out, and I think once we kind of get down to a rhythm, we'll be able to know what works better for us and what we can eliminate. And the step, but at the same time, Judge Anderson's saying kind of keeping everybody or as many people involved in looking at it as we can. I don't want a hand to go up in the meeting and saying they left me out.
Well, the open meeting process helps with that, frankly, I think, because at this point it's early, and we're saying to anyone who cares to call in, this is what we're thinking. This is who we think should touch it, and it gives people an earlier opportunity to engage with staff to say we'd like to take a crack at this.
And by the way, the public should feel free to weigh in on these as well. They can write comments.
Absolutely.
The IFRs, they should also be weighing in and saying, we think this is a good idea. We don't think this is a good idea. Here's why.
I agree.
All right. Great. Typically, at the end of the meetings, we have a member forum, and I guess we'll go ahead, and that concludes our regularly scheduled part of the meeting. We have like a closed session with our forum. Go ahead and close out. So, wait a second.
Anybody need a shuttle?
We'll start with a shuttle.
Okay, just obligated to ask.
Anybody not going to the council meeting on Friday because they're settled to the airport? Anybody wants to admit to that right now? I'm not seeing anybody. Okay. All right, we're going to go ahead and go into closed session, and we'll go ahead and conclude our regular agenda.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh my God, you guys are so tight.
So we're gonna post. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm trying to do my research.
Good, I'm.